This is episode number six of the Road Trekking RV Podcast.
We are Jim and Sharon Angel. We both retired in 1999, sold our home and most of our stuff, and headed south on our sailboat. We have been full-time living aboard ever since. We have traveled many thousands of miles aboard our boat, and last year we decided we need to see some of this country's interior and wanted to do it in a motorhome. We did a lot of research and searching to find one that would suit us, and to make a long story short, decided on a Road Trek 210 Popular. Last winter, we took a trip from Michigan to Florida to California to Oregon and back to Michigan, traveling 17,000 miles over a six-month period. We are now spending the winter months aboard the boat and summer months traveling in our Road Trek. We learn and are very thankful for Mike Winland's blog, roadtrekking.com, where we keep up to date on maintenance issues others have had, and more importantly, places to visit. Mike's new podcast is an important part of our RV experience. We get many ideas and hear firsthand from people who are out there doing it. Leave it up to Mike to come up with a great idea. We love your Road Trekking, the RV Travel Podcast.
It's time for Road Trekking, the podcast. Traveling North America in a small motor home. Exploring, camping, boondocking, embracing the RV lifestyle. And sharing tips and where to go and how to keep things running right. Here's award-winning journalist Mike Wendland and his network of Road Trekking reporters.
Well, thank you so much. This is a show that celebrates the RV lifestyle, whether you live in a small RV like the Road Trek Jennifer and I travel in, or a great big Class A motorhome, a fifth wheel, a pop-up. Heck, even if you're just thinking about getting an RV, this show is for you. We talk about getting out there, enjoying God's creation, finding great campsites, exploring the countryside, as well as sharing tips on keeping our RVs well-maintained and using the right gear and technology to enhance our camping and RV experience. That's what Road Trekking, the podcast, is all about, the RV lifestyle. Well, this has been a great week, and I have great news. We are number one. I could not believe this. As we're recording this, November 4th. I got to make sure I got the date. Yep. As I record this, this is November 4th, 2014, and I just checked iTunes and its chart of its top-rated, top-downloaded podcast, and in the travel category, this podcast, Road Trekking, the RV podcast, is number one. Thank you. Thank you so many people for making this number one. And we appreciate the reviews. Please give us a review if you haven't already done so. It's amazing. We've had something like 83,000 downloads in 3 weeks or so since we've been producing these. And we are just humbled and honored. And thank you for spending time with us. I want to tell you that parts of this podcast today are brought to you by Van City RV, where they only sell and service Class B motorhomes, new and used, from all the major Class B manufacturers, and the Good Sam Club. Good friends, good fun, great savings. Join today. Well, the weather has turned cold, and we had temperatures down like 25 degrees. I winterized my RV over the weekend, and it turned about 50 degrees the last couple of days as I'm recording this. But winter and cold weather is here, and I think probably most of you who keep your RVs in northern climates have winterized it. Those of you in the South, you just laugh at us. We're going to talk about the South and the great snowbird migration. Many, many people heading to the South, an estimated in the millions. We'll talk about that. We'll meet one of the guys from the Recreation Vehicle Institute of America. We'll talk to them about some of the RV trends and also snowbirding. We are going to talk in our listener questions about stowing and carrying a motorcycle or a small dirt bike, and also some cool chairs. We've got lots of information coming up, including some stuff for you as you're planning your 2015 travels. We're going to give you five of our favorite places. Jennifer will be joining me a little bit later on in our bucket list as we go through that. So lots of things to talk about. To begin it all, I just want to again ask if you are listening to this program that you please subscribe. You can subscribe through the iTunes store or you can subscribe through Stitcher if you want. That's another great app that works with Apple devices or with Android. iTunes does, of course, as well. iTunes is the big gorilla up there. And if you subscribe, that means that every time there's a new show, you'll just get an alert and then you can download it automatically to your tablet or your smartphone or your computer, however you like. These shows come out every Wednesday. And I have really, I'm amazed how much fun I'm doing these. I've got now the studio almost set for the RV. As we're going to be heading, our next big trip is down to Louisville, Kentucky in early December. We're going to be covering the big RVIA industry show, and I will bring the road trek, and I'll have our mobile studio. We'll be recording a couple of podcast episodes from down there as we look at all of the innovation. I started another podcast, and that has been fun, and it's really a direct result out of what I'm doing here. This podcast, Road Trekking, has been chronicling our adventures as we've been traveling North America in a small motorhome for the last 3 years now, almost. But, you know, there's a downside to that. The downside to that was extra pounds that I picked up, particularly over the summer where we did so much traveling. We did a big RV trip along the U.S. shoreline of all five Great Lakes. That was like a 4,000-mile trip. We started in upstate New York and did the U.S. shoreline all the way around we went through New York and we went through Pennsylvania and Ohio, all along Michigan, Wisconsin, in Illinois, Indiana, and then back into Michigan. And we did it in just a record time. I did not do a lot of exercising because we were driving and reporting and videoing. And that sort of started a pattern that lasted all summer, because no sooner did we finish that trip than we did our big Western trip where we headed west all the way out to the Pacific Northwest coast. And the result was I've gained about 15 to 17 pounds over the summer. So I've decided I'm going to change that. I'm going to become super healthy me. And I started a podcast because a lot of other people I know, particularly RVers, is, you know, we got to figure this out. We got to eat better while we're on the road and when we're traveling, and we can't eat like it's a vacation every day. So I started, you can check it out at superhealthyme.com. Give me some encouragement. And I'm kind of chronicling how I'm changing my life and getting a little balance into it. But I'm having such a good time with podcasts. I think I might even do a third podcast for all my technology stuff that I do with my PC mic tech blog as well. But this is the main one. And as I said, just thrilled to be number one on the iTunes travel category. That's just amazing in such a short period of time. Well, let's talk about snowbirds. You know, it's such a popular term now that Wikipedia, the online encyclopedia, even has an entry on what a snowbird is. And a snowbird, of course, is somebody who typically retirees who wish to avoid the cold and the snow temperatures of a northern area and maintain ties with family and friends by going south where they stay in an RV park, or they camp along the beach. Some are business owners who have a second home. But the big thing is RVers. They estimate that there's 2 to 5 million snowbird RVers out there. And these are people who usually are in a motorhome or a fifth wheel. And they have it for the sole purpose of traveling south in the winter. And they tend to go to the same locations every year, Florida, Arizona, and they consider it's like a second home in their RV. They'll stay at a park for 3-4 months. Many RV parks label themselves as snowbird friendly. If you've been around Florida, they get the majority of their income from the influx of RVing snowbirds, and that migration starts usually right at about Halloween time. Many stay home and they watch their grandkids go trick-or-treating, and then they hit the roads. I was on I-75 the other day, and I could not believe how many of them I saw going south. There are places in Florida is a big place. Quartzsite, Arizona has tens of thousands of them. They're named white cities because from a bird's eye view, all the motorhomes cover the landscape in white, you know, with the white roofs and the white color of the motorhomes. And then in the summer, they're gone and it's desert. Historically, Florida has been the number one RV snowbird destination, but other U.S. southern states are now experiencing a boom from snowbirds as the RV boom continues. They're enjoying the southern climate without the hurricane threat down there. We're talking about the town of Starkville, Mississippi, for example, which has become a destination for thousands of out-of-town RVers. We'll be going to Goshen, Mississippi, for a friend of ours, a roadtrekking.com pal who put on a Mardi Gras gathering last year. We're going to do it again this year. There's about 40 or 50, I think, that are going to be there. So snowbird people and snowbird travel is a big deal. We thought we would do a quick interview and check and see with one of the industry experts on what's involved in snowbirding, and then how big of a trend has it become, and where's the RV trends headed now? Who are the RV buyers, and what are we going to see in 2015 in terms of innovation with RVs? So let's check this interview. Joining us now on the telephone to talk about this snowbird phenomenon, all you have to do is, again, look out on the north-south interstates and you see them heading south, is Kevin Broom from the Recreation Vehicle Industry Association in suburban Washington, D.C. Kevin, how are you today?
I'm doing fine. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's great to be here. And this is the time you're right in the middle of where it's still probably kind of warm there in suburban Washington. But up in the Midwest where I am based, it's it got down to 20s. So that snowbird migration looks pretty good to me right now.
Yeah, going south in the winter is always a nice thing to do.
Now, the numbers, as we have talked about earlier, we see estimates from 3 to 5 million. Nobody really seems to be able to track it much more than that, but a significant number of RVers head south. Where are they headed, and what's the allure in it, other than, of course, getting rid of getting out of the cold weather?
Well, they're headed primarily, like you said, points south. Florida, Arizona, Texas, Southern California, those are sort of the big destinations. Just because, you know, they're warm and there's sun and chance to get outside and enjoy yourself and, you know, spend time with your husband, wife, you know, whoever you brought along with you, you know, the friends you meet along the way. And the allure is, you know, like you say, it's one, just being able to get away from the cold weather and all that kind of stuff, just be someplace where it's warm and where you can spend time, you know, having fun doing, you know, in the nice weather, that kind of stuff, seeing beautiful natural sights, especially, you know, just spend time outdoors. And then one of the allures of RV, you know, doing it in RV, is that you'll save a bunch of money doing it, because, you know, with the RV, you have your hotel, your apartment, your kitchen, your transportation is all wrapped up in one thing. And you don't have to, you know, buy airline tickets. You don't have to eat in a restaurant every day. And, you know, when you're out there traveling, you can fix your own food. You've got your own refrigerator, got your own kitchen, you've got your own bed. You know, it's all nice. You don't have to pack and unpack, because most RVers, for example, they'll sort of pack their favorite things into an RV, and then as they're getting ready to go on a trip, they'll pack, you know, additional stuff, whatever they want for that particular trip. But, you know, you don't have to lug a bunch of suitcases around, you know. So all of that is...
you know, I was looking at just this. You guys commissioned a study, the RVIA did, on the savings are involved in an RV vacation, and I guess that would apply also to the snowbirds. But I was amazed to see, for a Type A motorhome, 38% savings over if you're going to go condo it or hotel it, that kind of stuff. Type C, 28 to 48%, and a Type B up to 48% again. So that savings is real money by staying in your own vehicle.
Yeah, and that savings includes the cost of making the purchase, you know, including the cost of owning the RV. It's not just, you know, the what you spend to travel. It's not just like comparing campgrounds and you know, gas. It's including all of the costs of ownership, divided out over the number of average days of use, and that's about 25 days for a typical RVer. A snowbirder obviously would use the RV a whole lot more than 25 days a year, you know. So
now, there's some considerations for those who go down and snowbird, and one of the big ones, of course, is what do you do about your mail? I mean, you're leaving your brick and mortar place where you live, and you're living in your RV in a park somewhere in a warm climate. But what do you do about all the mail that's piling up back home?
Yeah. Well, there's a few options. One is you can just put a, you know, basically a mail, you know, U.S. Postal Service hold on it so it doesn't get delivered at all. The other option, which a lot of folks do, is there are mail forwarding services. So your mail will get delivered to the service and, you know, once a week or once a month, however often you want it, they'll just bundle it all up and ship it to you wherever it is that you are. And so there are services that will do that for you. But nowadays, though, with so much of our life is handled online, you know, so many of the bills are handled online and that kind of stuff, that, you know, you get an email now with a bill instead of necessarily getting a, you know, a paper mail, and then, you know, a piece of paper in the mail, rather. And same thing with, you know, note from a family. You know, I can't remember the last time I got like a postcard or a letter from a relative. It's an email or a text.
That's so true. I just looked at my mail the other day. I picked it up and it was a pretty good stack, but it was all ads or political come-ons because of the election that just happened. And by the way, I know the Family Motor Coach Association operates one of those mail forwarding services that a lot of RVers do. And that, I think Good Sam does as well. Those are really handy services, so you don't have to miss it. What about a medical situation? Folks, you know, need doctors and prescriptions. Do they get doctors down in their destination? Or I know the national pharmacies will allow you to have prescriptions filled, you know, if it's a chain that you work with at home, that'll also work on the road. But sure. What about the doctors?
Well, that's an interesting issue, and it's one that I'm really not quite sure. It's one of those things where it's kind of individual to each insurance plan and how each person, you know, works out how it's all going to work. A lot of insurance plans will accept, you know, will pay for, you know, medical care that you receive. You know, if you're from Pennsylvania, say, and you're in Florida, they'll pay for it down there too. And some won't. You know, I just...
So it's a matter of just checking...
The Affordable Care Act, I don't know how it all works now.
You mean you haven't read through that 14-foot pile of documents for that? I guess...
I'm a foot and a half in.
Oh, yeah. Boy, I can't wait for the next chapter, you know.
It's a cliffhanger.
But at the bottom, I guess, is you check with your physician, and there are many places I know. We did a snowbird tour of Florida last year for roadtrekking.com, and we stayed in a number of these Snowbird Parks is what we call them. And a lot of the folks seem to indicate that they had doctors down there as well as back home. So it's not hard. You just have to do a little planning.
Yeah.
So the allure of the snowbirds is probably one of the big factors, I think, that drives a lot of retirees to buy a Class A or a Class B or Class C motorhome. Are these communities that have developed around them, these parks, that seems to be a big part of the story as well. That's so many reasons. Then they're really full-fledged resorts that cater just to snowbirds.
Yeah, there are that. And, you know, that is a big part of RVing in general. And it is one of the draws for snowbirds is, you know, they like to, some folks like to go back to the same spot, see their same friends. And but what you end up with in those parks and RV campgrounds all over the place is sort of like this small town atmosphere, you know, where your kids kind of go out and play with the other kids, and you know, people go over to each other's RVs and they, you know, check out their rigs and what kind of equipment do you have. Oh, that's really neat. Would you like some of you know, they want to have dinner with us, or you have some drinks, sit around the campfire, you know. And so it's very community kind of atmosphere. It's generally, you know, RV campgrounds are generally very friendly, and I know that the snowbird destinations are as well. You know, it's very, there's a real sense of, like, you know, helpfulness. Everybody's watching out for each other. You know, as an example, I mean, this one time I was camping, and you know, my water hose was leaking, and the way I found out about it was somebody came over and knocked on my door and said, "Hey, your hose is leaking back there," and since I know how to do absolutely nothing mechanical or anything like that, the guy actually fixed it for me.
So that's I've had that same experience. I find if you just kind of like shrug and lift your hands up, like, I don't know what to do, somebody will come by with some tools, and that's great. That is a good part of it. I know there's a study that you guys did on the typical buyer, and I think we reported it a couple of weeks ago on the podcast. We talk about snowbirds primarily being retirees. but one of the fastest growing demographics now in the RV world out there are younger people, younger than the retiree generation. I was very surprised to read that.
Yeah, well, the levels of ownership, first of all, the average age of RVs has always been lower than the stereotype, you know, pretty much always. It's been 49 for a long time, right around 49, 50 years old, and then it actually has come down. The average age of an RV owner now is about 48 years old.
Really?
It's obviously pre-retirement. About 40% of RV owners have children under 18 living at home. So it's definitely a family atmosphere, and most of the retirees, you know, a strong contingent, you know, travel, you know, once or twice a year with grandkids or with their grown children and their children, you know, so there's multi-generational travel happening in RVs.
Yeah.
But the biggest group of RV owners is the age group, the 35 to 54 year olds.
So,
and one of the faster growing groups are the 34 and under.
So it is really taken off. And I guess one of the things that when you go back to the retirees is that this generation of retirees, the baby boomer generation, are the most affluent and the most healthy of the retiree generations that I think that we have ever seen. And so they seem to be gravitating like crazy to the RV world. I know the sales continue to grow. Is that a factor that you see throughout the industry, is that we have a much more active RVing population than we did before?
Yeah. One of the big things, big sellers, big features that sells in RVs over the last 8-10 years has been what we call a toy hauler. And you've probably seen this where they have usually in the Type A or Type C motorhomes, and then also in some of the travel trailers, you know, the trailers, the typical, you know, standard travel trailer and then the fifth wheel trailer, the bigger trailers, where they have a ramp in the back and people will load their motorcycles, ATVs, quads, you know, power toys usually, and in the back. And then when you get to your destination, you can lower the ramp, take out your power toy, and it converts to a living or sleeping area. And now increasingly people are using the feature as, like, you know, tailgaters, for example, will use it as like a back porch on their RV, you know, or some people use it, you know, they don't want to do the power toy thing, but they do want that, you know, like I said, that back deck, if you will, on the RV. And so some versatility there once you own that unit. But that's been a big seller, and it's been a big seller across every age group. And the reason is exactly what you said, is that people are more active, even into their 50s and 60s and 70s, than previous generations had been. And, you know, getting old, not necessarily what it used to be.
I was on I-75 the other day, and I was just counting. And I did about a 100-mile trip, and I was just counting how many southbound RVs I saw. And it was literally about one in every 10 vehicles. And wow. I saw one. It was a Type A motorhome. I think it was a Monaco. And it was actually towing a Type B road trek. So I would have loved to have found out what they're doing, but I've gotten email from people before who have done that, and they park the big motorhome where they snowbird for the year, and then they use the road trek to branch out for 1 and 2 and 3 day trips around the area.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing to me to watch it. Well, the annual migration of the snowbirds is underway. And a younger audience, and a younger buying group that we're seeing for RVs, and whole communities. That community aspect that you talked about, Kevin, is pretty cool. So I'm heading to, as I know you are, to in about a couple of weeks to Louisville for the big trade show, and I don't want to steal any thunder, but anything we should be looking for in particular. This is always a really exciting time at Louisville, the big fall trade show right after Thanksgiving.
Yeah, well, that's exactly it. It's an industry show, and basically everything, all the latest and greatest, all the new ideas show up in Louisville. And so this year, I would expect, you know, the trends that we've seen in recent years, I would expect to be to continue strengthening, and we'll see things, you know, in getting vehicles getting lighter, getting more aerodynamic, you know, sort of sleeker looking, and I would also expect to see, you know, an increasing integration of technology into RVs, where you'll see more RVs that are being controlled by, you know, can be controlled by a tablet PC or, you know, a tablet computer, or, you know, even an app on the you know, on your cell phone or some smartphone or something like that. That's just the kind of thing. And then increasing fuel efficiency as well across the board. you know, that's one of the benefits of lighter weight and towing, is that you can get better fuel economy. And then on the motorhome side, you know, just better engines, you know, as the auto manufacturers make better engines, you know, they'll certainly make their way into the RV industry. And so that you'll see, you know, increasing fuel economy there. And then one of the things that RV makers are doing as well, you know, because they're buying the chassis, generally speaking, from, say, you know, Mercedes or Ford or GM or, you know, one of the big automakers, is that they'll build the house, if you will, on the back of it in a way that's lighter weight, that's more aerodynamic, so that, you know, to preserve the better fuel economy and to, you know, get the best economy that's possible.
Some of those Sprinter vans are getting 22 miles a gallon. It's just amazing.
I took a trip in a Mercedes Sprinter, took my sons on a little camping trip, and we got just over 20 miles per gallon on that trip.
And, you know, you tell people that and they say, yo, come on, that's an RV. And it is, but it is. Well, great technology. And, of course, all of that will be migrating the snowbirds next year, the show that starts in a couple of weeks here in Louisville. We'll be seeing the new models, and those will be on the snowbird migration route next year as people pick them up at their dealers throughout the year. Kevin Broom, thank you for joining us. And I'll look you up in Louisville, and let's sit down and have a chat and see what is cool on the show floor.
Sounds great. Look forward to seeing you there.
You're listening to Road Trekking, the podcast. You can find show notes, links to resources and websites Mike and his guests mention, and background material, videos and photos on the roadtrekking.com RV travel blog. And you can also send Mike a voice question to answer on the podcast. From the blog, just click the send voicemail button. That's at roadtrekking.com. The small motorhome RV travel blog.
Sponsoring this part of the Road Trekking RV podcast is Van City RV in St. Louis, Missouri, serving RV shoppers from the center of the country. Van City RV is one of America's top dealers. They specialize only in Class B motorhomes from the three major small motorhome manufacturers. They have them in stock and on display, and Van City RV loves to deal. They only sell Class Bs. The owner, Ray Dyer, is the dean of Class B sales. Nobody knows small motorhomes better than Ray and his crew. They not only stock new models, but they have a large inventory of used Class Bs as well, and they have a great fly and drive program for buyers. You shop, you buy from anywhere in the country, you fly in, they'll pay your airfare, they'll pick you up at the airport, you get taken to Van City RV, and you pick up your new unit, which is all prepped and waiting for you. I've been to Van City RV, I've met Ray and Dan and the crew, and they have one of the top service centers in the country. They've worked on my Road Trek motorhome, and I can personally attest to their skill and their expertise. Here's Dan with this week's special.
Hey Mike, just want to let everybody know we extended our $3,000 discount till the end of November. Don't miss out on some great savings on some 2013 and 14 models. Give us a call at 1-800-467-3905, or you can check us out at vancityrv.com.
That's 1-800-467-3905, Van City RV, where you'll always find the best Class B for you at the right price, and there are never any hidden fees. Check them out, vancityrv.com, and for special pricing, let them know that you heard about them through the Road Trekking Podcast.
Questions. You've got them. Mike and his network of road trekking reporters have the answers. Here's one of our listener RV questions of the week.
Hi, Mike. It's Marlene. I have a question regarding winter camping and traveling in my Road Trek. I have a 1999 Dodge 190. I'm concerned with driving in Canada and the upper U.S. with the snow conditions. The van is very heavy, obviously, and I don't have snow tires on the van. I've never seen anyone discuss the kind of tires that might be required to be driving in the winter conditions. Or as long as it's not snowing, we should be okay. So if you could please talk about that would be grateful. Thank you.
All right, Marlene. Well, you know, we've had a couple of questions about this. I think we answered one of these in one of the episodes back a couple of weeks. But no, I don't think you need any snow tires. Now, I'm driving a Sprinter-based Class B motorhome, and I have taken that, as you will hear in a few minutes, I love winter camping. And I have taken that up into northern Minnesota, where it's 21 below zero and lots of snow on the ground. I've driven it in a whiteout across a road that parallel Lake Superior, and I've never had any problems with control. I think it's that extra weight, as you said in your question. So I wouldn't worry about getting snow tires. You just don't need them. There's enough weight in these vans, and they're so well made and balanced that they'll handle just fine in the snow. So hope that eases your question, your worry about the snow. But you shouldn't have any problem at all. Now, there are some places I know in some Canadian provinces that require snow tires on certain sized vehicles. So you want to check your local laws, but the vehicle will do just fine. Let's do another question.
What brand are your zero gravity chairs, Mike? I'm shopping for some and I want to be sure I get a good quality brand. I've read about some that people have to restring the bungees after 2 years, and I'd rather avoid that if I could. I see some good prices on overstock.com, but I wonder if that's the quality. So let me know what your brand name is.
You know, I got this question. I went out and I looked to see if it had a brand name, and all it had was made in China on one of the tags, and it said, Hecho in China, in Spanish and in English. So I don't know, but I'll tell you where I got it. I got it at, picked two of them up this summer at a Walmart store. Where were we? I think we were in Missouri. And it was, they were on sale. They were normally $59, and we got each of them for $39 at a Walmart. So they're not a fancy chair. Turns out they are the same two gravity chairs that we have at our home in Michigan. And we've had those for 3 or 4 years that we also picked up at a Walmart down in Georgia. And so I don't know what the brand name is. It's a light beige colored chair, but at $39, if it breaks in a couple of years, that's okay. You know, I think they're fine. I looked in on this tag that it had, where it said it was made in China. It said the weight limit was 250 pounds. So you know, if you're too big, you might want to get a heavier duty chair. But I'm not saying you're big. I don't know. I don't know what you look like, caller. But that's my thing. So it's a gravity chair. We picked them up at Walmart. I know Camping World has a lot of them in stock. The key is sit down in it, see how it looks. And in our case, we have a rather smaller unit. You need to sit in it, and then you need to fold it up and see how it stores in your RV. So if you have a Type B RV, you want to make sure you have a place to put it. We had to do some juggling around, but we found a solution to ours, and I think I've shared that on roadtrekking.com. So there's the question on the gravity chairs. Hope that helps.
Want to be part of the podcast? Ask a question, leave a comment. Look on the right side of Mike's roadtrekking.com blog and click the send voicemail button. We welcome listener voices and love your questions.
Mike's got news.
RV news, travel news, tips and trends about the small motorhome lifestyle.
Here's the road trekking news of the week.
Well, this story is about, for all of you who love the national parks, you're going to get really angry about this. Have you followed the debate that goes around the country about graffiti artists? These people who deface buildings. And of course, some elements of the media, well, they're artists. You know, they're vandals is what they are. And somebody has been doing that throughout our national parks, particularly at places like Crater Lake in Oregon. You know, that is an awesome place. These crystalline blue water and the vibrant green pine trees and the rocky cliffs. Well, that was one of dozens of places around the country to have its beauty, I would say, violently interrupted with cartoonish artwork painted in garish shades of color by one of these so-called graffiti artists. Not only do such drawings negatively impact the aesthetics of, you know, these beautiful national parks and the landscape, they're illegal. And they've got the person arrested, a woman by the name of Casey Nukit, or Nukit, 21. Officials are investigating her, a National Park Service. She shared the paintings on her Instagram account. And that account's, by the way, been deleted. And she's believed to be responsible for paintings in Joshua Tree and Death Valley, Colorado National Monument, Rocky Mountain in Colorado, Crater Lake, Oregon, Zion, Canyonlands in Utah. And she has defended the work through social media, says it's art. Well, whether it's art or debatable, it is illegal if that is what she did, her alleged actions. The Code of Federal Regulations applies to national parks, and it says vandalism is destroying, injuring, defacing, or damaging property, and that's what they've done. So last star, I think they actually have charged her, I think, and they're going to prosecute her, and we'll see what happens. But come on, putting all that stuff out, that's just nuts. Our other story comes to us from Edmonton in Alberta, Canada. And this has to do with an RV swindle. One of the, they say it's the Alberta's largest ever RV fraud schemes, that $2.3 million shell game, according to officials there. They have arrested a guy by the name of Donald Dunzelman, 59-year-old guy, who had an RV business for some time. He sold a number of RVs to people, claiming that they could then rent them out and make all sorts of money, and owners never got a bill. They got this guy, and they have charged him, and they have sentenced him to, I believe, 7 years. He's admitted that most of these RVs were gone. We've got an interview from the Edmonton Journal in which some of his victims explain what happened. And I think that this is pretty telling for all of us, because it will help us understand, you know, there is no such thing as a free lunch or a free RV. Here's an interview, and this is from the Edmonton, Alberta Journal newspaper.
He's been defrauding people for, I didn't even know until before we even got us. There's, we've met many different people through the courts that he's, some people lost their houses, their land, lost their retirement monies, well, which in the case, that's what we've done. We had a good retirement fund started to build a house. We no longer have a house. We still have an old mobile home. But we figured out all our interests and lawyer costs and motorhome costs, and it worked out to just over $110,000.
The vehicle behind us is a 2003 Empress Regal, 28-foot, and we bought two at the time. The other one we didn't get, and we call it the ghost motorhome. We never got it. We seen it a couple of times. We used it for one weekend, and we had to pay for it.
Both bought from Arnold Dunzelman.
At Leisure RV. Just west of Millet, yeah. Alberta. 3 miles west of Millet.
He got 7 years, and from what I understand, he's tried to get out on bail twice, and he's been denied twice. And I hope he has to stay there for his full seven.
But it was a seven-year battle to get him there. And so for him to get 7 years in prison, it was a good day, very good day.
Well, that's an interview with two of the victims, Stan and Burl Pledge are their names. And the guy who swindled them, convicted and sentenced to 7 years in prison, he's in jail now, Arnold Dunzelman. But not so much that case at all, but just to let you know that there are all sorts of issues when you hear these people. And it's a big scam, because RVs are so popular these days. There's all sorts of people that are trying to sell an RV, and then they'll keep it and they'll rent it out, and you can buy it. You can use it anytime you want, but you'll rent it out, and we'll get rental income, and you'll be great. And you know, if it sounds that good, too good to be true, it usually is too good to be true. And we're hearing more and more examples of fraud like that. So that's a story of Stan and Burl Pledge from Alberta, as shared with the Edmonton Journal newspaper up there. That was some audio that they had put up on their website. So one guy in jail for it, but be careful, because these things kind of happen all over the place. Sponsoring this portion of Road Trekking the RV Podcast is the Good Sam Club. It was created over 50 years ago to help folks like you get the most out of your travels. And today, with over 1.5 million members, the Good Sam Club provides the resources you need and a friendly community to back you up, making the journey that much more fun and exciting. Good Sam Club is well known for saving RVers money with member discounts on RV accessories, installations, campgrounds, even fuel. Good Sam helps more money stay in your wallet. It's also there to help support you on the road, offering services like roadside assistance and warranties and insurance and more, all designed by RVers like you. When you join Good Sam Club, you gain access to free publications, expert technical advice, how-to videos, a library of articles that makes RVing easier, and it gives you the opportunity to learn more about RVing so you can get the most out of your time on the road. With over 1.5 million Good Sam Club members, you can do more than just share the road. You become part of the largest RV community where members connect to share information and offer advice and meet up for social events, even volunteer together. Good Sam Club, it's about more than just savings, it's about community, helping your fellow RVer, getting support while on the road, and learning more about RVing. Good Sam Club, good friends, good fun, great savings. Join today.
What's on your RV bucket list? Maybe the place Mike has for you now on this week's Road Trekking Destination of the Week.
Well, if you're a regular reader of the Road Trekking blog, you know that Jennifer and I love to RV across Michigan's pristine Upper Peninsula. They call it the UP, and people who live up there call themselves Upers. This is a place where big towns simply are not, and the scenery is jaw-dropping gorgeous. Lots of forests and lakes and streams, and of course, the big Lake Superior, which they say is the coldest, deepest freshwater lake in the world. It's an awesome place. Superior borders the UP up in the north. The south coast is bordered by Lakes Michigan and Huron. It is an awesome place. And I know many of you are now thinking about your bucket list for 2015, where you want to go. And we get lots of email from people because we are up there so much. And they say, well, tell us your favorite places. So Jennifer joins me and we've come up with our five favorite places in the UP.
All right. Are we ready to go?
You want to share your number one favorite place?
Yeah.
I
love the Sioux Locks. I can't believe first time we went there was a couple of years ago. I guess we go north and then it was either Sioux Locks or Tequamenon Falls, and we always seem to head to Tequamenon Falls. But after having gone to the Sioux Locks, I absolutely love it. It's peaceful. It's relaxing. It's a must-see. It's Sault Ste. Marie, the end of I-75. Just drive as far north as you can. You'll end up in Sault Ste. Marie. And you can look at these locks. The locks are a set of parallel locks. They enable the ships to get between Lake Superior and the Great Lakes, the lower Great Lakes. And you're going to be able to see all kinds of giant freighters, barges, tugboats. There's like a 21-foot drop between Lake Superior and Lake Huron. And you're in luck. Every day you go, you should be able to see ships. I think about 10,000 a year go through the locks. And the locks are the busiest locks in the world. And we also have the largest lock in the Western Hemisphere. So it is very definitely a place that you want to go see. And the activity at the two locks, the MacArthur and the Poe, 10,000 vessels a year going through. Great place to go. Make sure you do that. And viewing, you can go to the lock's edge, get real close to where the ships are going through. You can even talk. You can have a conversation with the workers as they navigate the ships to go through.
We did that, didn't we? Yeah.
We did.
Yeah. They were carrying a rope, and I says, hey, what are you doing? And he says, I'm taking my boat for a walk. Remember that?
These ships are huge. Some of them have like 72,000 tons of cargo inside, like a single vessel. And there's just it's just awesome.
Where would they stay? Where would they stay in an RV?
Well, the best place I think to stay is right in town. The city has a campground, and it's like 20 acres right along the water's edge. You just pull up your chair, sit down, get a book, relax, and watch those freighters go through.
We'll put some pictures up and, of course, on the show notes with this. But all right, so that's your first favorite place, the Sioux Locks, Sault Ste. Marie.
It's a must.
I-75. Okay. Well, here's my number two, which is just west of there, the Pictured Rocks National Lakeshore. You just go west along the Lake Superior shoreline. And the best place is this little lakefront town of Grand Marais. And that is the heart of the Pictured Rocks National Lakeshore. Now, a lot of people like Munising, and that's a cool place. We like Munising, too. That's at the kind of the western end. But Grand Marais is really a neat little place. It's the eastern end of the Pictured Rocks National Lakeshore. That is a U.S. National Lakeshore right along the shore of Superior. It extends for like 42 miles from Grand Marais to Munising. And unlike any other place on Lake Superior, you'll find you can just explore miles of pristine beaches. You can hike. There's 100 miles of trails there. And then you can experience the true serenity of this northern hardwood forest. There's bear up there, so you want to make sure you have a clean camp. And the best way to see the cliffs, by the way, if you can pull it, and that would be where you'd want to do this from Munising, is by kayak through the shoreline hiking trails. They'll get you close, but the kayak will get you right up underneath them. You're going to see sandstone cliffs and beaches and sand dunes and waterfalls and lakes and forests that will treat your eyes. You just will absolutely be blown away by the pictured rocks. And there's places to stay. There's National Forest campgrounds all along the way there. There's State Forest campgrounds. If you go to Grand Marais, which is the place Jennifer really likes, we stayed at a place there called the Woodland Park Campground. It's a city campground, I think.
And it was fun.
It was a great place. Right along the shore and great beach walking. And everybody up there hunts agates. You can find these agates right along the shore's leg. So check it out. The only downside of that campground is they don't take reservations. So it's a long way to go to find it filled. And about the only time it really fills up is on the holidays, like the 4th of July. So and we really love the camping spots in the federal campgrounds and the state campgrounds that are along the lake shore. They're boondocking places. So for us, it was no problem because we've got that solar and the E-Trek. But if you run a generator, they have a lot of generator free zones. So you want to take it. So pictured rocks, that's number two. Jennifer, what's number three?
Copper Harbor. It's located at the tip of the Keweenaw Peninsula. And if you want to know where that is, it's in the Upper Peninsula. So just hold your left hand sideways with your thumb pointed up, and your thumb would represent the Keweenaw Peninsula.
Right, the tip of your thumb there.
Right. You can't go any further north other than falling in the Lake Superior if you drive.
They say it's the end of the road, and it really is.
It truly is the end of US 41. And that's another place that we wanted to go to for years, and for some reason we didn't do it. And we finally made the trip all the way to the end, and it was worth doing. Delightful campground up there. The year-round population is like 90 people, so it's in the middle of nowhere. And they kind of, well, they don't have cell phone coverage up there. It's not good at all. You're a little bit out of luck with the cell phones.
They do have Wi-Fi everywhere in the town, though, and Wi-Fi at the Fort Wilkins State Park where we stayed.
Yes, the Fort Wilkins State Park is a great place to go visit. They've restored it. It's great. It's fun to go through. There's two loops to the campground, and the west end, it's paved and great for the big rigs, and the east end is flat, grassy spots, good camping.
It's a pretty cool place. All right, so that is Copper Harbor, and the Fort Wilkins State Park is where we stayed. It's a great place. If you're a mountain biker, you'll like that place. Okay, number four is the Porcupine Mountains. That's they call them the Porkies up there. And that's really, if you live out east in the Adirondacks or if you're out west in the Rockies, you're going to laugh that they call them mountains. But the Porkies are a group of small mountains. They are indeed mountains, small ones though, and they span the northwestern Upper Peninsula of Michigan. And they're right along the shore of Lake Michigan again. It's a wilderness state park, 60,000 acres, and it has the largest tract of old growth hardwood forests west of the Adirondacks, and it's home to black bear and deer and wolves and otters, even moose. And of course, it's all virgin timber up there. It hasn't been cut. Old growth forest habitat abounds there. It's awesome. Lots of places to stay. There are two official campgrounds. Our favorite is the one that's the primitive one. It's the Presque Isle River Campgrounds at the western end of the park. Love that place. It's not big. It only has 50 sites. Half of them are generator free. No electricity. It's very quiet. You can sometimes even hear wolves howl at night, and most of your neighbors are in tents or campers or small RVs. You don't see any of the big rigs there. If you got to have power, if you got a big rig, then try the Union Bay Campground. That is at the opposite end of the park. Union Bay is the largest campground there. It has modern bathrooms and showers and even Wi-Fi. It borders a rocky area, a scenic area of Lake Superior, but rocky. But don't expect a wilderness experience at Union Bay. It's a busy, noisy, crowded state park, and that's where the big Class A's seem to go. But if you really want to get away from it and experience it, go to the Presque Isle campground. We just love the Porkies. And the neat thing about it is you can explore them. You just want to do a lot of hiking there. And we'll put some pictures up again with the show notes. So those are four. Last one, Jen, what's number five?
Tequamenon Falls. That is a spot that we always used to head to, the Upper Falls and the Lower Falls. 50,000 acres of state forest up there. The state park is awesome. 13 miles all around the Tequamenon River and the waterfalls. You can even wade out in the river by the lower falls. The upper falls, awesome paths you have to walk to get there. You just don't drive up to it. You get to take a walk, which makes it even better. Your reward for your walk, looking at it. The upper falls is just like one of the largest waterfalls east of the Mississippi. It's got a drop of nearly 50 feet. It's more than 200 feet across. We saw it in the winter, and I think winter, it was awesome. I think maybe a little bit more beautiful than even in the summer, and there weren't the crowds, and there weren't any mosquitoes.
Yeah, we got to warn you about the mosquitoes up in the UP. If you go in July, you want to go very late in July and August to avoid the mosquitoes. You just mentioned winter camping, and we should tell everybody that we will be hosting a winter camp out at Tequamenon Falls this in January of 2015, January 23rd through the 25th. It's one of the few Upper Peninsula places that are kept open in the wintertime. Now, the last time we were there and camped, it had 28 inches of snow on the ground, and it was absolutely gorgeous. It was wonderful. We were very toasty and warm in our RV. I remember looking out and saying, hey, Jen, I looked at the temperature, and it was 7 below. And I said, hey, Jen, we're pretty tough. Look at that.
And then I said, look again, Mike, because right next to us was a tent. And a husband and wife were there. They were just newly married, and he had taken his wife camping.
In the wintertime, 7 below, 28 inches around. We had to ask them the next morning, well, how did it go? And they said, oh, they liked it.
So they did.
I guess they were on their honeymoon.
Yeah, and then there was another guy there camping also. Well, he had a tent.
He had a tent, and he had a wood-burning stove in the tent.
And he didn't have a floor in his tent, and it was solid ice. And I thought, how do you keep from falling?
Yeah. But we will be going in our RV, and we want to invite you up there, too.
Oh, and the upper falls are awesome. And then about 4 miles downriver is the lower falls. And that's equally, it's a different kind of beauty, but worth seeing as well.
Yeah, and in the winter, it's really cool because the big falls, you know, the water runs all the time, but they kick up the spray, and it coats everything in ice and mist. It's just beautiful.
Yeah, you can walk, or you can get a rental boat. Concessions are there. You can have a good time.
Now, you can do that in the summer.
In the summer.
In the winter, what are we going to do in the winter? We're going to cross-country ski?
Yeah, I'm going to probably try to stay warm.
You'll be warm. We're going to snowshoe. There's a really great microbrewery with an excellent restaurant that's open all year. We'll eat with a bunch of snowmobilers because they love to come up there. But if you've never camped in the wintertime, we'll talk about how to do that in a future episode. But January 23rd through the 25th, you have to go to the Tequamenon Falls campground website. It's a state campground, and get a reservation. There's 5 or 6 going already. And if you want to come, you can follow the link on the show notes with this.
And there are 2 campgrounds. In summer, there's 2 different campgrounds.
Yep.
But in the winter, only the one's open.
Only one, and they only plow, you know, a few spaces. The last time we were up there, we pulled in, I think they had 12 of them that they plowed, and they were quite comfortable, and the electricity was there. You still had electricity.
And what's surprising is how good the restaurant is, because you're in the middle of nowhere, and there's a good privately owned restaurant.
So you know what? We've just gone through 5 of our favorite places in the UP, and I realize as we're doing that there's probably another 5 that we could mention as well.
Oh, I bet there is.
Well, go to roadtrekking.com, our blog, and you will be able to see all of these places that we just love in Michigan's Upper Peninsula. It's a very unique place. If you've never been there, you want to go. But as Jennifer warned you, be careful in the early summer because there are a lot of mosquitoes and flies.
Yeah.
Enough said on that. Well, thank you, Jennifer, for joining me. And those are our five favorite spots in the UP of Michigan. You can check them all out and make your plans on the blog.
Have fun.
Traveling with technology. It's time now for our RV Tech Tip of the Week.
Hey, last week I shared a really cool thing called Text Expander, and this was an application. It's really only for those of you who use Macintosh, Apple computers, the MacBook Pro or the desktop, or if you have a Mac phone or a Mac tablet. But and I had five copies that I gave away, and I got to tell you, the company gave me five copies to give away. I no sooner released this episode than they were gone. That's how many people jumped on. I've heard great response from everybody who got one. And it's a cool program. Well, I've talked to the company, and here's the deal. They have now offered a deal where they'll take 20% off. I think it's $34 for a copy of this thing. Text Expander. This is a really neat little utility. You download it to your computers. It lets you quickly type, they call them snippets of text. And whether it's like a full letter or whether it's paragraphs or a signature, no more, and this is what I like about it, no more fat-fingered mistakes. I love it. I use it while I'm traveling because I can respond to email. I can write faster and more accurately, keeping data charges down while I'm online. If with a hotspot, you know, I don't have to worry about typing it all in and then going back and correcting it. This is all written. So many of the things that we write are, and we use our computer, you know, we do it over and over and over again. Sometimes we change a few words here and there, but put it all in a snippet, just a couple of keystrokes, bam, it enters it for you. Well, anyway, here's the deal. After I contacted the company, they gave me five copies that I can give away. I did that. They went literally within an hour after the show became available. But I talked to the company, and they're offering a 20% off the $34.95 cost. So 20% off to Road Trek listeners. There's a special link. You can see it for a Text Expander under the show notes, Text Expander, and it automatically goes. It's a site just for road trekking, and it'll take 20% off the cost if you want to try it. So thanks to the company for doing that. The technology I want to talk about today is a site called Backblaze, and this is something that I started using this summer. I was doing a ton of traveling, and I was taking photos. I did a count, something like 5,000 photos over the summer in our RV travels. And I backed up some. I carried around a bunch of hard drives, of portable hard drives. I remember even one place I got paranoid and I stopped at a Best Buy and bought another one. It was just a hassle making backups. And then somebody steered me to a service called Backblaze. And it is a really cool little service. It basically uses Wi-Fi and it will back up everything. I mean, everything on your hard drive. Unlike any other online backup software that I've ever seen, you don't have to pick folders. You don't have to pick files. It just does it. You download it, you install it on your computer, and backups happen automatically. It has lots of great features. You can back up any attached, if you have an external drive, that's what I did with a lot of mine. I put them over, no extra charge, no limits to file size. You don't have to have a certain network speed. They designed this thing really well. Everything's secure and encrypted, but it backs up on either your Mac or your Windows computer, and you can access that anytime you want. The reason it is so neat is that if your hard drive crashes, and it will, it's not a question of when you'll have it crash and lose your data. It's when. It will happen. It's so easy then to get your data back. It's really simple. They'll even send you a hard drive with everything on your computer. So it's a good deal. It costs like $5 a month. And I have a link on their show notes and you can check it out. But this is great if you do a lot of traveling, you take a lot of pictures, even video, whatever you put on your computer, whenever you're on Wi-Fi, and you can schedule this so it'll do it at night, you know, when you're asleep. You can do it at home as well with your home system and your home Wi-Fi. It just does it automatically. Backblaze is a link on the show notes. Then you can check it all out.
Traveling North America in a Class B motorhome. This has been Road Trekking the Podcast with journalist Mike Wendland. Got a question for next week? Click the send voicemail link on the roadtrekking.com blog. Till then, we'll see you out there. Road Trekking. Road Trekking.
And so ends another episode of Road Trekking, the RV podcast. Part of the show is brought to you by Van City RV, where they only sell and service Class B motorhomes, new and used from the major Class B manufacturers. and the Good Sam Club. Good friends, good fun, great savings. Join today. Well, I hope you enjoyed this program, and I want to invite you to please do a couple of things for us. One, if you would subscribe to it. Yes, that's a big thing. Subscribe. I don't know how you listen to this. I'd be really curious if you send me a note to tell me how you listen to the show. You listen to it on a smartphone, or you listen to it on your computer, or do you listen on a tablet? If you have a smartphone or a tablet, and it's a great thing, just go to iTunes and subscribe. You can also use the Stitcher program as well. There's links on roadtrekking.com. And let me know how you listen to it. But the nice thing is, if you subscribe, then every time there's a new episode, it is automatically put in your queue, and it doesn't take up any of your memory. You don't have to worry about that, but you won't miss an episode. We come out with a new one every Wednesday, but there'll be some times when we'll do a couple a week as various things warrant. Show notes for today will be on the roadtrekking.com blog, so you don't have to go back and re-listen to get any of the links that we shared with you. We'll have links and all sorts of things that you can find out there. We thank you so much for being a part of the program, and we invite you to come back. This is a great opportunity to keep connected with the larger RV community. And if you'd like to have your voice heard or be part of the podcast, please record a voicemail message. Click the right-hand button on the roadtrekking.com website. We invite you to follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/roadtrekking. And if you are on Twitter, I tweet all day long about RV stuff. I'm Road Trekking. That's the name on Twitter. So again, please subscribe to the podcast. If you can, give us a review as well. New episodes every Wednesday. Till the next time, I'm Mike Wendland, Road Trekking across North America. So long, everybody. We'll see you out there.